At the club, Lance becomes increasingly concerned that David and Todd haven't returned. He tries David's, then Todd's cell phones. No answer, just a roll over to voicemail. Then he calls the electronics store and speaks to the manager, an old friend. "Hey, George, this is Lance Anders." "Hey, Lance, how you doing? I just saw David and Todd. What's up? Are they still there?" "No, they left a while ago, about 3/4 of an hour, I think." "Did they say where they were going?" "I think they said they were headed back to the club." "Is there something wrong?" "I don't know. They're not here, and I can't raise their cell phones. I'm getting a bit concerned after the trouble we had here the other day." "Yeah, I understand. Say, have you still got that security camera on your parking lot?" "You mean the one you installed?" "Yeah, works fine. Would you mind letting me look at the video for the last hour?" "No problem." "Hey, George, thanks." "You bet. Catch you later." They hang up. Lance waits a few minutes to give George time to copy the file. Then he does an anonymous FTP to George's server and starts the file transfer. When the transfer finishes, Lance brings up a viewer and begins scanning the images. A date timestamp in the lower corner flickers by as he fast-forwards through the data. He sees David's SUV in the parking lot. Then he sees a large white van pull in. He slows the display. 4 guys get out of the van. He recognizes them as the ones that were trying to get into the top floor to kill Mike. He watches them head for the alley that leads from the parking lot to the front of the store. They disappear into the alley. He speeds up the display. After several minutes of elapsed time, he sees them re-emerge from the alley, this time with David and Todd, whom they quickly hustle into the van and drive off. Lance pages Mike, Tom, Bob, Mary, Jay, and Sean and tells them to meet him in his apartment, ASAP. When they arrive, he quickly fills them in on what's happened. He turns to Tom and Bob and asks, "Those guys we left out on the interstate, do you know them very well?" "Yeah, we know them." "You know where they live?" "Yeah, some dump over on the far north side of Council Bluffs. Part of town called Canesville," says Bob. "Yeah, that's what all of Council Bluffs used to be called. They have an old beat-up farmhouse there. We know how to get there if you want directions," says Tom. "Here, on this map of Council Bluffs, point where?" Tom gets up and walks to the screen and points. Lance blows up that section and says, "Okay, now where?" Tom studies the map a bit and points again. Lance blows up the map one more time and Tom points again. Then Lance switches over to a satellite view and Tom says, "That's it," pointing to an old house with what appears to be a couple of abandoned cars in the backyard. Lance records the GPS coordinates from the database and sends them to the GPS unit in his SUV. Jay says, "Let me see if I can find anything going on in St. Louis." She opens a window on Lance's display and taps into the data stream that's still being captured from Jack's laptop. She says, "There's no current voice traffic, but wait a minute, I just scanned the web browser cache. He just logged on an airline website, then a car rental site. Let me scan his cache further. Yep, there it is. He just bought a ticket to Des Moines and arranged for a rental car. Big SUV, it looks like. His plane leaves at 3:30 and gets to Des Moines at 4:30. So he's heading to Iowa to meet them, I guess," says Mike. "Sure looks that way. Question is, where is he going to meet them? I guess he would have flown to Omaha if he was going to see them in Council Bluffs. Just to be safe, I'm going to log into the rental company and make sure his car has that nice GPS-based roadside emergency service. That way I can track him," says Jay as she brings up the rental company's webpage and pastes Jack's confirmation number into the Modify reservation box. She quickly upgrades his car. "When he checks in, I'll get the vehicle ID and start tracking the onboard GPS system. Those systems really run through cell towers, although they market them as satellite-based." "Well, I guess we'll be able to tell where they're meeting eventually," says Mary. Jay interjects, "But maybe I can get something quicker. Lance, you say you tried their cell phones?" "Yeah, I got voicemail." "Did they ring first and then roll over, or did it say out of service, then roll over?" "They rang first. Sounds like the phones are still turned on. If they've got them with them, we might be able to find out where. Do you know if they're usually set to ring or vibrate?" "Vibrate. They can't hear them ring around here most of the time." "Good. First, let me get into Todd's cell phone tower cracker. I thought all this stuff was super password protected." "Oh, it was. Not anymore. At least not for me," says Jay with a grin on her face. "Finally hacked my way into Todd's system." She quickly brings up several screens, and the system begins scanning for the IDs of David and Todd's phones. "Now, while I'm scanning for locator data, I'm going to try sending them a message. First, I send a script to their phones that will let me take control of the vibrator function. Done. Now I can send a pattern that will let them know we know. Any idea what it should be? Some code like 1 pulse, 2 pulses, 3 pulses? I know Todd knows Morse. Probably the last person on Earth who does," says Lance. "Morse it is. And no, he's not the last. Second last. The last is me. Geez, finally a hidden talent that's good for something," says Mike. "You be quiet." "Okay, here goes. I'm sending. Jay, MSG, scanning cell towers. Cell phone mics are on. It'll take a while to transmit since those vibrators aren't the fastest way of sending code. Any way to know if they got it? Not really, unless one of them says something and I pick it up on the microphone. But if the bad guys got it?" "Yeah, like they know Morse. It'll just seem like an incoming call. They won't know the difference. What if the ringer is on?" "Same thing. Just a funny ringtone. Unless they know Morse." In the van, Todd smiles and winks at David. He whispers, "I guess we owe Jay that $50,000 prize. She's hacked my system, which means she's tracking us. Just got a message in Morse on my cell phone." David whispers back, "Is that what it was? I thought the vibrator was broken." Todd begins singing something unrecognizable. A lot of da-da-dit-dits. David gives him a weird look, but Jay hears it and decodes Todd's Morse reply as ACK. They got it, says Jay. A few more minutes, Jay says, bingo, I found them. There they are. It's a hot signal from a tower near Griswold, Iowa. The GPS on Todd's phone says they're moving east, apparently on Highway 92. That's not the way to Des Moines. Any ideas, guys? Oh, yeah, they're heading for Fontenelle. Yep, that's gotta be it, says Bob. Definitely Fontenelle. Mike chimes in, yeah, I think so. That's the only place it makes sense. About halfway to Des Moines, and it's real secluded. Adair County. Damn smiley face on the water tower in Adair City. Lance says, what do you know about it? Plenty. Been there lots of times. That was a big collection point for the meth we used to cook in Iowa. Very remote. That county has a really small population. It's not too far from the interstate. Ideal place for distribution. They used to cook meth there, too, says Tom. Yeah, back before it became tough to get Sudafed, adds Bob. You know, the farm's not really in Fontenelle. It's just the nearest town. The farm's out in the middle of nowhere. So you've been inside the place and all that, says Lance? Oh, sure. Lots of times. Lance brings up the map. Tom and Bob point to where the farm is. They proceed to discuss the roads and their probable condition. Lance says, okay, Mike, tell me the layout of the place, as he enlarges the aerial image of the farm and surrounding buildings. Well, as you can just about make out, there's a main farmhouse, a big long barn, a few outbuildings, and some silos. There's a lot of supplies still stored in the barn. The main house is a standard four-square farmhouse. There's a large wraparound porch, dining room on the front left, big living room on the front right, center staircase, hall running from front door past the stairs into the kitchen in the back, pantry between the kitchen and the dining room. There's a back door to the kitchen, says Tom. Any dogs? No, Jack hates dogs. Good, no barking. Okay, so where do you think they'll put their prisoners? Don't know. Dining room, pantry, kitchen, who knows? I don't think they'll worry about them escaping. It's a long way to the next farm, and it's way below zero out there this time of year. Yeah, that's true, and they probably won't expect anyone knocking at their door tonight either, says Lance. Right, the last thing they expect is company. That's probably why Jack picked it. Totally isolated. That's our ace in the hole. What are you going to do, asks Mary. The guys and I are going to head over there and kidnap them back, says Lance. You got a plan, asks Mike? Sorta. I'm working on it. Okay, people. Now go get your coats and dress for cold weather. We'll all meet down at the loading dock in 15 minutes. Will do, says Tom as he and Bob get up and hurry to their apartment. Turning to Mike and Jay, he says, you two stay here and work the communications. We'll keep in touch. Keep tracking them if you can. You got it, says Jay. I should go, says Mike. No, you stay here. You're the one with the goods on Jack. I'm not taking any risks with you. As the kidnappers pass through the small town of Messina, Iowa, not far from their destination, they park in a remote section of the parking lot of a local supermarket while Roger and Nick run in to load up on supplies, mainly junk food supplies, a bunch of frozen dinners, ice cream, donuts, boxes of frozen pizza, pop, cheese, crackers, mixer, steaks, and frozen french fries, along with a lot of whiskey and beer. They push two shopping carts wobbling in the snow-covered lot back to the truck and pile the stuff next to David in the cargo area. Around 4 p.m., just as it's getting dark, they arrive at the old farm and drive down the long gravel road to the farmhouse. The county road isn't in bad shape. The plow has made a pass at it, and it's only drifted in a few places. The road to the farm is bare in spots, but heavily drifted in others. Nick runs the van fast but skillfully through the drifts and manages to make it to the farmyard. One of the guys jumps out and pulls open the big doors of the huge barn, flips on a light, and the van pulls in. The barn in which they park the van is a long building full of old farm equipment, as well as three large propane tanks used to dry corn, along with several tanks of anhydrous ammonia. There are several barrels of industrial chemicals, including toluene, acetone, aqueous sodium hydroxide, ether, and other tools of the drug trade. Two large tanks containing diesel oil and kerosene stand on metal stilts, and several bales of straw line the walls. Since the supply of Sudafed dried up, there's not much cooking that goes on here anymore, except when they manage to get an occasional shipment of Sudafed out of Mexico. Nick says, okay, Roger, you go get the furnace started. I hope there's enough propane in the tank out back. Dan and I got the groceries. Bill, you run that pickup with the snowplow around and get the road passable for Jack. Nick opens the back of the van and says to David and Todd, you two stay put unless you want to try to make it 10 miles to the next farm in this weather. Nick and Dan unload the groceries in a few trips, leaving the frozen stuff on the porch where there is seriously no danger of it thawing. After a few trips, they head back to the van and prod David and Todd into the house. Once inside, Roger joins them from the cellar where he's been starting the furnace. They can hear it running, but it will take hours before the house is up to a comfortable temperature. Roger says he's checked and there's plenty of propane in the tank. In the meantime, he'll light a fire in the fireplace. What'll we do with these guys, asks Dan. Put them in the dining room, I guess, says Nick. Should we guard them, asks Dan. Yeah, what are they going to do? It's minus 20 outside and a wind chill of about minus 30. The nearest house, probably unoccupied, is about 10 miles from here. Yeah, they're going to run, right? Replies Nick. Yeah, I guess they aren't going anywhere, says Dan as he motions David and Todd towards the dining room and pulls a couple of straight back chairs away from the old table.